Well, hello there. This is Creative Block. My name is Kyle Marshall. I'm the owner of Media Lab YYC, which is located in Calgary, Alberta, Canada. This is a podcast where I get to talk to artists and creative entrepreneurs about where they've been, where they are, and where they hope to be. If you haven't been keeping up with the news here at Media Lab, then I need to give you this announcement that I have hired my first employee, Matt Mort, who actually was a previous guest on this podcast, has now come aboard so he can do a lot of the video editing for me, take that off my plate so that I can really focus on the business stuff. I can grow my business instead of just being inside of my business, which I'm sure the entrepreneurs out there have struggled with at least at some point in their career. One of the cool things that Matt did here this past summer was that he got to work on a web series called Abracadavers. That's just a fun thing to say, right? It's a web series that actually is starting to release episodes on the YouTube channel. There'll be definitely links in the show notes to this episode so you can see that. But he kept mentioning the amazing experience that he had working on that show. And I knew after I saw episode one that these were the types of creatives that I really needed to talk to. So I invited on Morgan Ermpter and Jordan Wright to come on and discuss a little bit about their history, how they work together, and a little bit about the show itself. I know oftentimes for new filmmakers, they don't really like the comparisons to established people because it kind of takes away a little bit of your own outlook, your own flavor, your own style. But there is this kind of undercurrent, and I tell it to them in my interview with them about how there's, you know, shades of Wes Anderson, there's shades of the Coen brothers, but there's still this uniqueness to their vision that I just find delightful. There's some great comedy beats. The mystery and the science fiction of the story is enough to pull me forward, and I can't wait to see where this series goes. But before we get to any of that, I need to mention that Creative Block is a proud member of the Alberta Podcast Network, powered by ATB. The Alberta Podcast Network promotes and supports Alberta-made podcasts and connects their audiences with Alberta-based businesses and organizations. You can find us and all the great shows at albertapodcastnetwork.com. I should also let you know about some of our sponsors here this week. So this episode of Creative Block is brought to you by Shaw Business. Shaw Business offers a whole suite of smart solutions, like smart Wi-Fi. With dedicated networks for you and your guests, smart Wi-Fi keeps everyone's connection separate, safe, and secure. And it reaches all corners of your business. So whether you're at your desk or in a meeting room, you're still connected and ready for business. Smart Wi-Fi is one way that Shaw Business is powering the entrepreneur. To learn more, visit shawbusiness.ca. Our second sponsor is Let's Do Coffee. This is another podcast, and it's presented by the Maji Center for New Venture and Student Entrepreneurship. That's part of NAIT, the Northern Alberta Institute for Technology. Each episode dives into topics that explore the challenges, questions, and fears each individual has or had when operating their companies. In the latest episode, they talk with Allison Hodson from Zag Creative, a full-service marketing agency in the heart of downtown Edmonton. She talked about her journey as an entrepreneur going from her first job all the way to having Papa John's as a client. I don't want to ruin the surprise of what happens when they take longer than 30 minutes to deliver their designs. You can find Let's Do Coffee by going to letsdocoffee.libsyn.com. Thank you to our sponsors, and now let's go to my conversation with Morgan and Jordan of Abracadavers. We talk about a lot of things, such as unknown songs, salon chairs, and collecting bugs. Let's go to that now. Morgan Ermpter, Jordan Wright, thank you so much for joining me here today.
Thanks.
Oh, yeah.
Thanks for having us.
Very exciting.
I know. Everyone's so excited about this. I think we should just jump right into it and just ask the question. Can both of you just describe who you are and what it is that you do?
Yeah, sure. So, Morgan, as previously mentioned a few seconds ago, I'm a writer, director, producer. That's it, really.
Right, okay.
And I'm Jordan. Yeah, I do a lot of things. I sometimes act. I studied opera in university, so I do a lot of that. More in the past, not so much lately, but yeah, a lot of acting, very little writing, really. I like to think about stories, but I couldn't write to save my life. I work in coffee as well. So I'm a real foodie nerd, love flavors.
I'm going to make you sing an aria by the time we're done here. But
all right, I'm warmed up and ready.
Okay. A few minutes.
Always come ready with an aria prepared.
Jordan, I guess we'll start with you here. I know that before we began recording that you grew up in Toronto, or at least born in Toronto. So tell me what it was like. What was it like being raised in Toronto?
Oh, yeah, Toronto. Gotta love Toronto. I grew up in Scarborough. So for any Toronto nerds out there, it's not really Toronto, more GTA. But I love Toronto. I moved when I was like 12. So my experience like living in Toronto is all sort of part of a really foggy part of my memory. But a lot of my family is still there. So I visit for, you know, a few weeks out of the year. Yeah, I mean, I can't say enough good things about Toronto. I'm a huge Raptors fan, so that's probably a hangover of being born in Toronto.
Sure. I remember as a kid when the Toronto Raptors were like a thing and they were coming out.
Yeah.
And everyone just had the jerseys. Like, it was so cool because I think it was Jurassic Park and the whole thing.
Totally, yeah.
Kind of around the same time, so.
Yeah, they had the big purple dinosaur on the jersey. It's a little bit of a sort of weird Barney sort of looking.
An alternate universe Barney
guy. Yeah, a scary Barney for horror movies or something. I think, you know, that's a big part of growing up, especially as a kid in the 90s in Toronto, was watching the Raptors because they were new and exciting, and, you know, Vince Carter and all the Vinsanity. So,
and you moved to Calgary, is that where you first
yeah
moved to?
My family moved out here when I was like 12, I think. Mm-hmm. And then I've been here ever since.
All right. So Morgan, you grew up here in Calgary. What was that like?
Good. More to the point, I grew up in like a 2-kilometer radius. Never.
All right.
Yeah. Very like small community. My house, there was the back alley, and then there was my school. That was like a K-12 school. So a lot of my life was very, it was all in one spot. Yeah, like grocery stores are like 2 blocks away, the movie theater's 2 blocks away, the school's there. A lot of our friends.
What area of the city are we talking about?
Like Glenbrook, Glamorgan area. I've never considered how that kind of affected me in the long run, but I'm sure somehow it did.
So when you saw downtown for the first time, it was just like, whoa.
I hate downtown.
Yeah.
I'm sorry to say, I've grown very close-minded. I don't like parking. I don't like driving.
I get it. If I didn't work down here, I would have avoided downtown as much as possible, right? So it's a necessary evil.
Yeah.
That we all must live with.
I mean, I moved really close to the C train, so I should take it upon myself to branch out and experience more of Calgary.
Sure. Yeah. I sometimes ask this to people, but I'm just curious. Mm. What is the first thing that you recall becoming obsessed with in your life?
Ooh, becoming obsessed with. Weirdly, I went to my parents' house because me and my brothers basically had all just moved out, and they're making room, and they're like, hey, we're getting rid of a bunch of stuff, really. We don't want this. You used to be really into this. Do you want it? So I used to collect things. So I had a bug collection. And I had a coin collection, but the bugs were something that I was really, truly obsessed with growing up in like elementary school, just like collecting bugs and learning about bugs. This is probably something you're finding out for the first time, Jordan.
Right. So when did you know you were a serial killer?
Instantly.
But I am curious about what that actually entails. So you would like go on the hunt, put them into like what, like a little box to preserve them?
Yeah. So like my grandparents live out in Vancouver, so we'd visit them like every other summer, and you get like the big, nice big bugs there, right? More variety than you have here. So
stupid tiny Calgary bugs.
Yeah. So I had I had like a large box that they're all in, and you know what, Jordan, you can come see it. It's in the Numera office.
I'm excited.
So a box, and then basically it has like different layers in it. So I had the bugs divided by like size, and then they're all inside little like circular glass containers so you can see in top, and then you just gotta give them a nice little pierce with a pin and stick them to the bottom, and that's
I love it.
That's okay. It.
How about you, Jordan? What were you obsessed with when you were a kid?
This is a really tough question off the dome, hey? That's a tough thing to answer. Probably like when I was a kid, when I was really young, I was obsessed with the Detroit Red Wings.
Okay.
For sure. So yeah, hockey. Hockey would have
been
something.
Did you pin them and put them under glass?
I did, yeah. I have a collection, and the police have been looking. So this actually, probably you shouldn't air this at all.
Okay.
But they've been looking for me because I have a collection of full-grown hockey players just sort of in little glass tins that you can see.
That's where
the top.
They went, yeah.
You give them a little pierce, and
boom. So it sounds like you're kind of a sports guy, though. Toronto Raptors, hockey for the Red Wings.
Yeah, it's funny because I didn't really play any sports. I mean, when I was a kid, I played a lot of basketball. But it was just sort of more like the family you grow up in. Like my grandpa, I called him my papa. He was like really into hockey. So if I'm hanging out with him and he's, you know, talking about hockey, you want to be able to sort of keep up. And the only way to do that is to get interested. So yeah, that part of my family's from Windsor, Ontario. So, you know, you get the big Detroit base in Windsor because they're basically the same
across
city,
the way,
right?
Yeah.
So I guess that's where that comes from. At like a younger age.
Mm-hmm. When did movies become something that you fell in love with?
Probably like middle school for me was when movies became... I think it was probably when I started to notice that like there were more movies than just the ones that were sort of the blockbusters.
Do you recall any that stand out to you?
Yeah, the Fountain. Was probably one of the first movies that I ever saw. My friend Scott, who did sound actually on Abracadavers, showed it to me. He was a huge Aronofsky fan. That's the right. He did The Fountain, right? Okay.
Sometimes
I get confused between The Fountain and The Tree of Life, but they're not similar at all. So that doesn't make any sense.
No.
Or even from the same
person.
Time period, really.
No, that's so interesting, though, that you say that you were still in high school then when The Fountain came out.
I saw it in middle school or high school.
Okay.
So I don't really know when.
I can tell that I'm a little bit older than you because I was definitely when I was in university or just after university when I saw that.
Do you any idea when it came out?
I'm going to hazard a guess that that was 2005 or 6.
Okay, yeah.
I think.
So I wouldn't have been in middle school yet when that movie came out, but I saw it in middle school.
Mm-hmm.
And it was sort of the first time that it was like, oh, the movies are like a form of combining a lot of different arts that I'm interested in. Like music was probably the obsession that was forced on me. Every man in my family who's ever gone to university went to get an opera degree. So like my dad has one, my older brother has one, I have one. It's like, it's just sort of a thing. So that means like, as soon as you can talk, you're taught to sing, you're put in whatever the best choir they can find is. And so I guess like that more than sports would be like the obsession of my life because it's what I've dedicated the most of my time to. But yeah, I guess like movies became this sort of zone where like a lot of really interesting visuals combined with like really moving music that like on its own doesn't stand in the same way, unlike the music that I'm used to, like the more classical music, you know, your symphonies, your whatever, they're not dependent on a visual, but like just the way that stacking really interesting art, like great writing, great visuals, great music actually makes this sort of like compounding art form was like, that would definitely be the point where it was like, I can't get movies off my mind.
Yeah, it's like the individual parts are just able to elevate the whole.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Right? How about you, Morgan? When did you start thinking movies were something that you wanted or that you fell in love with?
It was the first two filmmakers you mentioned are like Aronofsky and like Terrence Malick.
Right.
Mm. See, I watched a lot of either very bad, not very bad because hindsight, I think they're great, but a lot of like comedy films and a lot of bad, these ones were bad horror films. Back in the day. Yeah, it was just the group of friends I hung out with. The thing was always like get together on the weekend, make like a bunch of pizzas and then just like watch a comedy film. So I'm talking like Napoleon Dynamite or Hot Rod or Shaun of the Dead.
Yeah,
like Pick of Destiny.
Yeah. Fubar as well.
How about what were the bad horror movies?
See, those ones are like so much less memorable because I don't, they're not ones that like I want to revisit.
Sure.
But it was kind of, I think part of it was like the rebellious stage, as rebellious as I ever got, which seems like not a lot, but just like living in this small town neighborhood, where my parents like back when I was young, it was like, you can't watch Harry Potter because they break the rules. And in the end, you know, they win the house cup. Or like, you can't put this song like on your iPod until we like sit down and read through the lyrics to it together. And you like talk about what you think the song means to you. So this was like, yeah, I get to like go to my friend's house and we get to watch a movie that has like swearing in it on the weekend.
I'm sorry. I just have to say, to steal a McElroy phrase, that is buck wild that your parents were upset because they cheated. That was the reason they didn't want to watch Harry Potter.
Well, because that was the whole thing. It was like Harry Potter was coming out and we both went to like a Christian school growing up. So it was always like, oh yeah, it's like, it's demonic. It's like witchcraft. It's bad. And my parents were always like, no. It's because they're given a set of rules at the beginning of each film, and every time at the end they get scolded, but then Dumbledore or whatever is like, here you go, 100 more points. You're the best.
You still get to win.
Yeah. Yeah, that didn't
they're cheaters. Them. We do not support cheaters in this household.
Yeah.
Did you go to university?
Yes, I did go to U of C.
Okay.
And then I went to Saint. And now it's now.
And now it's now. Yeah. Did you like get a degree or anything like that while you were there?
So U of C does this combined degree. It's like a 2-and-2 program where you do 2 years at U of C and then 2 years at Saint. And basically what I had heard was that the Saint program was like really, really difficult to get into, but that this combined degree, they like have to let in a certain number of people that do this combined degree every year into the SAIT program. So it's like, I'll do the 2 years at U of C first and then I'll try and get into SAIT. You can do it the other way around, but that would have been a big mistake. So I did the 2 years at U of C, then followed up to SAIT and it all went according to plan.
Oh, great.
And, perfect. No hiccups.
How about you, Jordan? Did you go to school?
I did, yeah. I went to Ambrose University and I got a degree.
Where is that, sorry?
So it's in Calgary. It's like in the Southwest, a small sort of university up there. So I got 2 degrees there. I got a one in psychology and one in opera. Yeah, one in music.
Okay. That's quite the double major, I guess.
Yeah, very strange. Very strange combination. It can only be done by somebody who has absolutely no clue what they're going to do with their lives.
I think that would make for a funny short, though, like the singing psychologist or something like that. But
yeah.
We'll workshop it later.
A silent film. Yeah,
a silent film. you say you have no clue, but by the end of that tenure, was there something that you were thinking about pursuing?
I went into it thinking I wanted to direct operas. And then I guess I sort of realized that actually seemed like kind of a lonely life because the market is pretty small in any one particular place. So if you actually end up being any good and being sought after, you've got to spend basically like 4 months, could be 4 months, could be a couple months in a different city every, like, you know, after every show, just like go somewhere else, do it again. And it, I don't know, I'm a very like, community is like a big part of who I am. And so this idea of like, you know, making friends with all these people and doing a cool thing for like 3 months and then being like, maybe see you never again.
Sure.
You know,
sure.
It was sort of like, oh, that actually doesn't necessarily seem that fun. I guess I was also interested in, how do people think and is there some way that I can study that and right. learn that and sort of deepen my understanding of like what people are going through, maybe find some way to use that in a like helpful manner, sort of led me to doubling up and taking some psychology as well. But then I don't really know what the thought process was there. None of them were in any way career minded. It was just sort of like, these are the two things that I'm interested in and good at, so I guess I'll see what happens. Those.
Yeah,
and then now I do neither. So, you know, it all worked out.
All worked out. Yeah, Morgan, did you have any idea about what you wanted to do after you went through your programs?
I mean, like basically this. My path has been a lot less complicated than Jordan's. If you look back to my like, I had these like childhood journals where it's like, the year, it's your first year, grade one. Who was your best friend? What's your favorite subject? What was your favorite food? And it's like, what was your career? And mine was always like film director, which is weird because like the only DVD I owned until like high school was Finding Nemo. So like,
it's the perfect inspiration.
That's right. Just keep swimming, man.
There wasn't a lot of variety. Oh, that's not. Oh, that was a straight up lie.
Oh, no.
Yeah.
We have to retract that statement. All right.
The most formative, the two most formative things while I was growing up that my parents did allow me to do were very, like, curated, watching Lord of the Rings and recording reruns of Star Trek Voyager on to VHS tapes because it only aired at, like, 4 a.m., because that was a good solid show and my dad really liked it.
Interesting.
But I don't know. Yeah. I don't know why it was. I was always like, film's what I gotta do, because those two things, I was like, well, I like spaceships and I like also really liked the video game spinoffs of Lord of the Rings. So,
but yeah, interesting. Okay. But it was just always there.
Yeah. These are things that were around.
So what was your first foray into making films then?
I was a copycat, I think, basically. In grade 8, I believe, there was a group of my friends that did a video project instead of like an essay project or a diorama for The Hobbit. So they did this movie. And then from that point on, I was like, anytime it allows, I'm doing a video project instead of writing something or whatever else you're allowed to do. It's going to be a video project. And then I sort of carried that mentality out of high school. So there's a lot of like really old videos that we've done that are like, I guess like most of them are book adaptations that are very bad, okay. But very highly praised by our teachers.
And also very much against copyright.
Oh yeah. Yeah. Big time. They got like Evanescence in there, and right, like right. Weezer and you know, it's good stuff.
When did you two meet?
Yeah, we met in 2004. We were both in grade 4 at that point.
Okay.
So, that's when I moved to Calgary, and my parents dropped me into the school that Morgan went to, and
serendipity.
That's when we met. Yeah, it is serendipitous. It's sort of been like a long journey. I remember like in 2004, I used to like every day after school, me and another friend of ours, Jared, would go into
my neighbor. Just to reinforce how small the network is.
Yeah. It's I got dropped into a real closed loop network. I never would have made it otherwise. Inside of the network, I mean. And we'd go into your backyard and play baseball, which basically was just like somebody throws a ball at another person and somebody hits it and then you sort of run and touch the fence or something. Mm-hmm. The yard wasn't really big enough for the whole diamond.
I was going to say, considering how small the yard was, the fact that we were probably using a tennis ball, we weren't very good.
Also, like the thing is, we were right next to our school, which did have two baseball diamonds. Yeah. So I'm not 100% sure why we felt that your backyard was the best practice for baseball.
That's true. We were afraid of big kids, maybe.
Oh, yeah, that makes sense. They're scary.
Yeah, those grade seveners.
Back like when you're in grade 4, yeah. Mm-hmm.
That's true.
I do remember that. Grade 6 people were so huge and tall, I thought, when I was in grade 1. And then you get there, I'm like, eh.
Well, that's like the interesting thing going to a school that was all the way like K-12 is like there's always like bigger kids around. And there's so many like sections of the school that just like you don't go to because that's where the big kids hang out.
Yeah. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Who knows what they'll do to you.
Yeah. Spooky.
That's right. They'll steal your lunch money is what they'll do. So, I mean, it's one thing to be like long-term friends and to pursue what you're interested in. It's another to actually like form a company and start to actually work with each other, because now you're mixing business and friendships, and there's been lots of stories out there that sometimes that goes really badly. So I don't know how long necessarily you have actually been officially working together, but how do you think you've been making that work so far?
Well, I mean, after the whole baseball backyard escapades of our childhood, I don't think we weren't friends for like, I don't know how many years.
Mm. Yeah, we sort of got slotted into different social groups.
Oh,
yeah.
I got it. So which one was the cool social group?
Not mine. Okay. And then what would you say is like the first like society? No, earlier than that you
earlier
were.
Earlier than that, yeah. Well, we sort of, I'd say we started like, you know, being, hanging out again, being friends again at the end of like grade 12. Mm-hmm. And then you, at that point, with like other friends of ours, were doing a lot of small short films and such. And I wasn't really involved in any of those.
Yeah.
Until, but then we went to university. And both of us were at the U of C originally.
Yes, right. Yeah, yeah.
And we had, what, a French class or was it a...
It was English.
So the opposite of...
It was not even. It was poetry.
Oh, yeah, that's right.
Okay.
I was trying to get my English credit the easiest way I could think of, which was poetry. Because you really can't... I was like, you can't make... There's no wrong answers in poetry, right? Like, yeah. Oh, I think the author's talking about birds. Like, well, that's... Okay, interesting interpretation. Sure. Yeah, technically, yeah. Mm-hmm. A point for you, I guess, was how I felt it would go.
Yeah. Yeah. 10 to Gryffindor, I guess.
Exactly, I yeah. So I was at the U of C for acting, but basically what happened is I was wakeboarding the summer before my first year of university, and I hit like a freak edge and had a traumatic brain injury.
Oh.
So I was like, it like really changed my personality. I was like super depressed, which I'd never been before. This is all very serious now, I guess, which is sort of weird. But anyways, what happened was I was still like sort of recovering from that and super in a weird place. And so I went to the U of C for acting, and I was like, it was all I wanted to do, acting. Like I had been in our like school's drama department, like audition for everything, like take more drama classes than exist, you know, like, and then I was like, oh, I hate this. This is terrible. And I don't want to be here. I mean, no offense to the U of C drama department or anyone who's been in their theater department. I'm sure it's great, but like I couldn't, I was like, I need to get out of here. Who knows why? Probably just my very strange brain activity at that point. So then, yeah, I transferred out, but I wanted to keep doing that sort of stuff. So I can't remember. I guess we did like a couple, like, I think the first thing that I got back into doing with you, Morgan, was you did a caption fail. Do you think that's the first thing?
I think it might be.
Yeah, mm-hmm. We did like a...
Styled after like Rhett & Link's old caption fail videos.
Yeah, yeah.
With the Google captions that were super messed up and wrong always. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that's true, actually, because Jordan had a lot of like background roles and stuff. Like in my high school senior project, he was just like in the background drinking out of a water fountain for like 3 minutes straight.
Mm-hmm.
He always had like background, he was in the background and around on the peripheral, before like, yeah, getting kind of more involved, I guess.
Is that something that you continue to do, like put things into the background of your shots?
Well, I guess yes. I'm just thinking about like literally the episode of Abracadabras that just came out has the lifeguard run into the background of that shot.
Mm-hmm.
That happens. But I don't know. I like.
Oh yeah, there's always a ton of like little quirky things hidden in the background. Like I think in episode one of Abracadabras, there's a point where the main character is running after the van and we see this like lemon stand in the middle of nowhere that says like lemons, it's like 5 cents or best offer or something. And that's a great background gag for sure.
Yeah. Yeah. I've noticed having watched the first two episodes of Abracadabras is there's things sprinkled through it and that things that the characters don't necessarily talk about, but it's there for humor.
Yeah. Oh yeah, totally. Yeah. Random, like just like quick bits that don't really mean anything ever get revisited are great.
Love gags that nobody ever comes back to or mentions or
mm-hmm.
Tell me about a little bit about that, because you're experimenting by the sounds of it, of doing like short films and comedy skits and stuff like that. Where are you showing these?
So all of this stuff was going onto YouTube back in the day, and my whole thing was I like just coming out of high school and then going into university. I remember my family sort of like presented me with this offer. They were like, for your like graduation present, we can get you like, we can like go to like a used car lot or whatever and get a car, or like, and this was not just like my parents. It was like all my extended family, like we're pooling in together or whatever. Like we can do this, or like we can get you your first camera. And like, what do you want to do? And I was like, well, I don't care about a car, probably because everything's within 2 kilometers.
I was going to say, I only have to walk two blocks.
Yeah, because of the radius. I was like, where the heck am I needing to drive? Nowhere. And I was like, yeah. And I the other thing is, I was like, I don't want to, my first summer off from from school, like I'm going to university, but I don't want to work right away. I just want to spend the summer just like trying to make short films and videos and see like if this is really what I want to do. So that was, yeah, that was way back then. And those all went up onto the onto my YouTube channel.
What kind of response did you get?
It wasn't, I was going to say, there's a few breakthrough videos, I guess. Like the caption fail video did very well. The best one was, cause I tried to do like a sketch, like every yeah. week kind of thing. The most popular one I did, was when I was sick. I dug into some family vacation footage, and there's like a 3-minute long video of my, Jordan knows what video.
Oh, I just realized what he's going to talk about. This is good.
Dug into my vacation footage and pulled out this 3-minute clip of my grandfather cutting down a tree, with me and my dad. And I was filming it for some reason, I guess. And I edited it. I think I was ahead of my time.
Oh, yes, definitely. You invented the meme, basically, with
yeah.
this video.
Okay. Yeah, I edited it into kind of like a mashup, like those, the MLG videos that were like a thing back in the day, where it was just like a lot of like effects and noise coming at you. Edited into that, called it Epic Tree Cutting, and then threw it online, and it became my most popular thing. And all the comments, you can tell it was ahead of its time, because all the comments on the YouTube video were from people who actually cut trees down that didn't right, get right. the joke. The comment that we always come back to is freaking, if I fell trees like this for even one day, I would be dead.
Yeah, there's like, it's just like a video of a man cutting down a tree, and then there's like lightning bolts coming out of the chainsaw, and yeah. it's like upside down for 2 seconds, and then it's yeah. just all the weird effects.
Mm-hmm. I was sick that week, so I like didn't wanna there's no way I was gonna film anything, so I just sat on my computer and edited this epic stupid video epic tree cutting together. Yep, stands tall above everything else we've ever done.
So then, I guess going forward then, when did you start to layer on like bigger and bigger projects?
So I did my high school project, which we like, everyone in our grade had to do a senior project. And the whole premise of it back then anyways was, if you were going to make a high school class exactly what you wanted to do, what would it be? And I'm like, well, a class where you get to make a movie. So I did that. And then the takeaway from that was, one day on set, I don't think you were there, but one day on set, we had to wait, I think, for someone's parents to pick them up. And there was like 3 hours of time that we had to kill. So we made this stupid like short horror film in this person's basement. And then the takeaway from that film was like, hey, let's do like a proper horror thing. So then that summer we did that. And then every summer since then, we were like, well, we need to do the summer short film. What's it going to be? What's the summer short going to be about? And so those were the serious projects, I think. And everything else we did throughout the year was kind of like a joke. And then we had some big thing that we did over the summer that would take like multiple days to do, basically. Because all these other ones would just be like one day of shooting, right? Yeah, so we had this first one was about... The timeline, yeah, the timeline then becomes pretty short, because the first one was about, it was like post-zombie apocalypse, where this guy lost his girlfriend and then kept her in his garage and fed his new friends to her. That was the horror film. And then after that was one about the like a physical embodiment of the end of the movie coming to kill people.
Interesting. Okay.
Yeah. And then the one after that was the Society of Birdwatchers. Which was like a high school club of people that like to watch birds. And then after that was the original pilot for Abracadavers.
Okay.
So that was the first, and that was the first time we got money from anyone, I guess. So all these other ones had just been like free stuff. Yeah.
So how did you split up the roles? Like, I mean, obviously you knew that you wanted to be director and stuff like that, but how did the company come about?
I think like... I mean, because we changed names a whole bunch. I'm trying to think, like, because we always would sit down to come up with these ideas, right? And that's probably how you come up with a movie that's about a physical manifestation of the end of the movie coming to kill people. But I think it's once we got money to got a grant to make a project, they're like, okay, well, this is starting to get serious now. And I was in state at this point too. So it was like 2 years and then you're, you know, out in the real world or whatever. But we need like a name, I guess, to put ourselves behind, like a sort of a rallying something or other.
Yeah. And what did you come up with?
Well, so the first one was, the first production name that we had was Tribute Productions back in the day. That was the OG, just based on the Tenacious D song, obviously. Where else are you going to draw inspiration from? And then I think we went straight to where we are now, which is Numera Films. And the origin of that is, I don't know, very sad, maybe. All right. It's a story. I'll tell you the story.
Sure.
So when I went to SATE, I was like, it's a small class size because it's only 30 people. And you know from day one, and this is something that they told you about, is like these people like have to be your friends because you're going to spend the next 2 years with them and you're going to see them every day for like 12 hours a day because it's film school and that like the hours are long. And I'm not normally like very extroverted. So I was like, well, I didn't make like any friends in the 2 years that I went to U of C at. What am I going to do at SATE? So I was like, I got to just like try and get to know whoever the first person that like sits down beside me is. And that happened to be Joe. So he's like one of the like main guys in our company now. And we had an audio class together. And in order to show how audio degrades with a lower bit rate over time, they showed us this YouTube video called like MP3 bit rate comparison. And
I was hoping you're going to bring back the epic tree cutting. I was like, wait.
It was epic tree cutting. Yeah. They were like, hey, look at how bad this is. Right. They showed us this MP3 bitrate comparison video, and the video used a song in it that instantly became like the song, like the theme song to our class. Like we put it in every single video. Everybody like made memes about it. They put it everywhere. It was all over the place. And the song was like, you're number one if you get the job done. You're number one. And there's like this huge quest to try and figure out like where was the full version of this song. we posted on like sites like all over the internet and did all those like song matching websites and stuff. And to this day, nobody's found this song. But when we got our first grant, Joe and I sat down and we were like, we can't continue to use Tribute Productions because like the movies we did under that they don't hold up, and also the acronym is TP and that's not great. So we're like, we need a new thing. What could it be? And so we just like started making this list of all these different names, and of course as a joke it was like number one was in there, and then it became like more Spanish somehow and it was like Numero Uno. And then right. It became Numera Films. So nice. It all dates back to this stupid, stupid joke that we came up
I love it.
Yeah. And then after that, we found out that it's like it's also like a Swedish word for like keeping up with the times, like being like in and like of the moment. So when professional people ask, that's what we say.
Yeah, exactly.
But for the sake of this exclusive podcast, you get the true story.
The real stuff.
Yeah.
Yeah. If anyone knows what that song is, you sure, are number one sure. .mp3. Love the full version.
So then so we have this company, and Jordan, you're more in like the producer type of role, would you say?
I was for Abracadavers. That was probably the first thing that I really produced. I mean, in the earlier stages when we were just doing like, what's the summer film? Like everybody needs to do everything. So like if you were to actually put like some sort of real credit on what people were doing in those like short films, everybody would be a producer.
Yeah. Yeah, for sure.
Or, and everybody's a PA and everybody's like boom op as soon as they're not in the shot. Like everybody just needs to cycle out. It's like, how can we angle this so that one person isn't in this shot so that we have anyone to hold the bounce and the boom or like whatever, the light. So that sort of like with that experience in mind when it comes to abracadavers and we've got like a bit more budget. It's just sort of like in the DNA of the people who are maybe still kicking around from those earlier days of like, yeah, I'll just do whatever, like whatever needs to be mm-hmm. done. Like I'm not doing anything else. So then, yeah, I guess I sort of just like racked up enough you'll do whatevers to get myself a little credit.
Yeah. I mean, it is true when you're in that like DIY or like independent thing, like you're kind of doing every role.
Totally.
Mm-hmm. Just because you have to.
Yeah.
Like there's no other way to do it. I will ask this though. I'll speak for myself, but I think I had a misinterpretation of exactly what a producer does for a film production. So I don't know if you can explain maybe your actual activities or what you're responsible for.
Yeah, that's a good question. See, I'm not sure that I actually have a great redefining for you. For me, like literally it was just pinch hitting, like just whatever I could do to help with social media or whatever I could do to make sure that like cast and crew morale is high. Like, are people sort of having a good time? Do they have complaints? How do we make sure that like we get all that stuff sorted out, as well as just like more sort of solving logistical problems? My big heroic moment was when I decided that we needed internet in the middle of the wild. So I went out and I bought us one of those little sort of, you put a SIM card in it and it just like beams internet out to everyone. So
that's what pushed it over the edge.
Yeah. Once I got everybody online, it was like, oh, this, he's done it. He's finally produced everyone.
Yeah. Executive producer.
Yeah.
Okay. I have to ask like the hacky question then at this point, but
please do.
Where did the idea of abracadavers come from?
Basically on my way to Sate one day, I was going down the alley and there was a hair salon chair. Mm. The hair salon chair in the show was in the back alley. And I was like, that's great. I got to go to class. And when I came back, it was still there. And there was a sign that said free hair chair on it. So I ran home and found my dad and said, hey, can we take the van? We need to go pick up this hair salon chair that's in an alley.
Right.
It's a very like Charlie and the Chocolate Factory sort of a visual there. Like
the golden
finds
chair,
the chair and he just sprints home, grabs that's right, his that's dad.
Right. Yeah, yeah, we need to get it. And he loved the fact that it was in our house for however many years.
Okay, so this was like years before you actually acted upon it or put it into the show.
Yeah, well, like 2015, I guess.
Okay.
And then we did the pilot 2016, the original pilot, and then hung out for a couple years and then got funding to do the full season. So
yeah, I guess I'm most interested in the actual like going through the funding process. So was it that you showed off the pilot that you had made to different people, or was it just like, I'm just going to give it to Telestory Hive and see what happens?
We got a lot of, so like we did the pilot and then they do like two stages for web series funding, where the first is you make a pilot and then the second one is you get funded to actually do the whole season of
the
thing.
Just to be clear,
yeah.
Did you get funding before you made the pilot or after?
Before we made the pilot. So we got funding to make the pilot, and then it was competing to like, I can't even imagine what the show would have been like if we won the grant to produce the rest of it back then for that amount of money.
Sure.
Yeah.
Sure.
The first time around.
Yeah. But so like we didn't get it, but we had a lot of like positive feedback. And I think most importantly, a lot of positive feedback from StoryHive about it. Mm-hmm. So then they announced their like $100,000 edition, or I guess just $100,000, not $100,000. It's a bit mouthy to,
sure,
a bit wordy
sure.
to say. Anyways, and we're like, well, this is the opportunity for us to make this thing bigger and better and revisit this whole project, because really we weren't doing anything at that point.
Right. I just to make a point of it for anyone who's listening who might not know what Telestory Hive is, and correct me if I'm wrong, but this is what I know from an outside observer. There's different contests, or I don't know if that's the right word.
They call them editions.
Editions. So there's like documentaries, and there's fiction films, and there's web series. There's a whole bunch of different ones I know that you can go through. And then people vote on it, and if you get enough votes, then they actually release some money for you to pursue it.
Usually. I mean, the $100,000 one, or 100K, well, I don't know why I keep calling it that. Anyways, the 100K edition, and I know, like, I think one of their more recent documentary editions, and the Indigenous one that they just did, and I think maybe even their animation one, they're kind of moving away from the, like, the voting
right.
aspect of it, which I really like. And I know also that the 100K one, I think, was the first time that they asked you to submit scripts as part of your as part of your package, which I thought was really cool. It just seems like they really listen to what people like, what people want from them, and what people like, kind of what expectations are.
I'd like to go through the process at some point, just because I do have some ideas that I want to try and, and create that would require a larger budget for it. But that was always the thing that kind of always upset me a little bit, was the voting idea. You have to find like enough fans or enough, or go to enough people to vote for you instead of like hopefully letting the work stand on its own.
Yeah, who has the most friends?
Basically,
sort of is a problem.
Yeah, who's willing to go there every day, vote there five times, et cetera.
Yeah, well, and I went to some like, some meetings too, where like basically like AMAs with Story Hive, just that anyone could attend, and that was a question that came up a lot, right? So I'm sure they got lots of feedback on that, but I think they've really changed the structure, and they've, I know that whatever the weighting is set so that Story Hive always has the like final say whether a project gets funded. Where back in the wild wild west days of Story Hive, it was definitely, do you have the most friends? Great, here you go.
Right. So the big question I then have about the show, because, I mean, again, I've only seen the first two episodes, but I've been really enjoying it so far. It's one of those things where, I'm sure you hear this all the time, so I apologize, but there is that kind of, like, I find, like, Wes Anderson or Coen Brothers sort of vibe that goes on with it. Just, like, the kind of odd but still funny sort of thing. So it's like right up my alley. With that budget and being responsible for actors and crew and stuff like that, what were your biggest learns? What were your biggest takeaways from this entire project?
I mean, this stands, like, legs and legs above any other project that we've ever attempted doing. So the list of takeaways that I have from this is quite lengthy. I think the just like having a timeline set out is maybe the most important thing. Not just for like, not just how are you going to shoot it, how are your days going to line up, but how much time do you have to prep this? How long is it going to take you to travel everywhere? When is everybody going to get paid in the end? Like, when can you reasonably expect all this stuff? And we just kind of made a bunch of like guesses and assumptions, I think, when we started the whole thing. Like, yeah, this will work out great. We'll be able to do this and it'll just happen easily and this will happen quickly and there won't be any hiccups with this. And it's just not the case. So I think it's a lot of like preventative maintenance that we'd add, that we're like, that I'd add to whatever we do next, really. And then I think the other thing, and this would be, this is why I'd say like, as we went on, Jordan became like a producer, is that, producing the project is something that people don't like really ever, or not ever, I shouldn't generalize, but people take for granted that that's like an ever expanding role. Right. So like back when we would do our short projects, like everyone's producing, but because you don't have a title, it's like, well, no, you're just acting, or like, I'm just directing or whatever. But that role, I think, always expands. We didn't have anybody on Abracadabra's Ever's dedicated to producing. It's like, I'm also directing, like Griffin is acting, Jordan's also acting. Right. And I think having people dedicated to those roles, like I can't say enough about how much that like would benefit production and make the whole process go smoother.
Right. Yeah. How about you, Jordan?
Takeaways?
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, like, to be honest, it feels like it's the first real thing that we've done. I don't think that's out of left field.
No.
That's such a hard question to nail down, just because it's like, I mean, it's like being born in a certain sense. Like, what are my takeaways? Everything is different.
Yes.
Like,
yeah. Sure. Yeah.
The
yeah.
world exists, you know, like,
right. Object permanence is
yeah, exactly. Like, and so, just a lot of things. I think for everyone, we worked with like a really young and talented cast and crew, you know, so like leaning a lot on like any veterans that we mm-hmm. had, but like, mm-hmm. I think that's like a beautiful thing for like creativity to like, to bring people who are like, you know, very fresh and see what we can do all of us together, very
right.
fresh. And, so yeah, like takeaways, man, I think we learned a lot of things like for scheduling, we would say probably is an area where we learned a lot of things, like how much can you schedule into a day realistically is a takeaway, like mm-hmm. where can we go to, you know, like yeah. how long should our days be, how long should our weeks be, like how far away can we go for location, like a lot of really just practical stuff, like logistics, I think was the big takeaway, like
yeah,
next time we will focus on logistics.
yeah big time.
Mm-hmm. I mean, one of the people I know that was on your crew, and just because he's written a note there on the whiteboard beside you, is Matt Mort was on your was part yes, of the crew,
absolutely,
running around, made a small cameo in episode one. It's a blink or you miss it.
Yeah,
I don't want to encourage him too much, so I'm just saying that happened.
That's what I like to hear.
Yeah. I guess one of my last questions here then is Calgary specifically. I know there's a lot of people here in the industry that are trying to really build up like the Calgary crews and the actual industry here in the city and in Alberta in a larger sense. So I don't know if you have any, I don't know, outlook on strengths, weaknesses, like what is working well, what isn't working well with the Calgary film industry currently.
Hmm. I mean, I don't want to be too much of like a poster child for StoryHive, I guess, but StoryHive didn't exist a few years ago, really.
Right.
Like they're relatively new. And the fact that the grants they're providing are so focused to the community, I think has helped a lot. I haven't worked a lot on like union shows, like actual things, but very quickly, I think what I found is that the community is a lot smaller than you would think.
Sure.
Like everyone's on the same shows all the time, kind of deal. But I think I think things are going good. We got the new film center and stuff.
Right.
There's a lot of like support for, I don't know, the arts, I think.
Mm-hmm. I think in general, like Calgary really benefits from its like adaptability. If you think about like the big things that have been shot here, they're a great like example of that. Sure. You think about like, you know, Fargo or Superman, or think about like Westerns that have been shot in Drumheller, or like what I found from the really beautiful thing about what we did is that like it's shot in Alberta almost exclusively. So we saw like a lot of Alberta in an attempt to make it look like a big road trip movie. Yeah. Like we demonstrate a lot of the different locations that Alberta has that can represent like a lot of space feels like it's past. Like you can feel like you're in, you know, the desert of the Wild West, or you can feel like you're in a big city, or you can feel like you're in, you know, somewhere with, yeah, mountains or plains or like whatever it happens to be, lakes, all that kind of stuff. Like Calgary's, I think, sort of like a booming alternative for the film industry in general. Like I think we'll see more things shot here. It seems like a lot of infrastructure is like aiming towards that goal. You think about like the new film center is a good example mm-hmm. of that, of a goal of like demonstrating that, hey, like shoot your movie here, mm-hmm. shoot your show here.
I know you were in a small little town called Innisfail, which I actually know quite well because my grandmother lived there all her life and my aunts still live there. So it's like, I'm there all the time.
Nice.
It's just interesting to see shots and stills from there.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that's a big part of episodes like 4, 5, and 6, I think.
Yeah, it was the first stuff we shot.
Yeah, we drove by one time and saw the hotel
right
on the highway and we're like, we got to shoot there. And we keep going back
yeah.
for some reason.
It's a staple.
So final question here then is, your outlook, people are usually really bad at figuring out what they're going to do in 10 years from now, but in the next year to, like, what are your goals, your immediate things that you want to accomplish?
I mean, I think half the reason for shooting films in the summer is that the weather doesn't suck. We did a winter film together, and why bother doing that again?
Yeah, it was negative 40 the entire time, and we were like in the mountains.
Yeah, it was bad. I mean, but it was good.
It was great. It's very beautiful visually, but it's like, oh man, what were we thinking?
Yeah,
those are some long cold days.
But my hope would be to continue essentially doing the quote unquote summertime film, just bigger and better, I guess.
Sure. Jordan, anything different?
Me? Oh man, I'm a big box of aspirations. I mean, like, as far as like that question can mean a lot of different things, right? But I think as a part of, you know, Numera Films, as it were, like, yeah, I agree with Morgan. Like, I'm hopeful that we can continue doing what we do and hopefully like catch a few eyes and just see sort of like we've got a lot of really cool stories that we have like either scripts for or early versions of scripts for that we hope we can get to make, because we think we've got some really cool and beautiful stories that are, yeah, worth telling. Who knows, personally, though, like just sort of like create the summer film, but then what do you do the rest of the year?
Yeah, you know? That's also my big thing.
That is the big thing for both of us. We either have to start making enough money that we can make one movie a year.
Yeah,
right, right.
And be fine for the rest of the year.
Yeah.
Or which would involve a lot of notice, you know?
Like, yeah, oh, yeah,
getting
yeah.
very famous.
Or get like super small projects. It's like, this movie never leaves this one room.
Yeah, exactly. So then really don't treat it like it's your job.
It's much easier when you can split the entire budget of your film between like three people.
Oh, sure. Yeah, that's sure. a good point.
That's we've solved it.
Get rid of everyone. Yeah. Go back to the old days.
Yep.
You're holding the boom between shots of you.
That's right. Well, thank you so much for coming in here and talking with me. If people wanted to, is there an easy way that they can follow either you or the work that you're doing?
I mean, luckily, Abracadavers has a unique enough name that you can just type it in and you will find the show. That's really, I mean, that's my thing right now. That's my whole life is the release of that show.
Sure.
Yeah. The Numera social media pages are good at sort of throwing out their other projects.
They're good at sharing Abracadabra's content.
They're really great at sharing Abracadabra's content. And also like pointing to other things that we've been involved in or that friends of ours are involved in or people we've worked with, whatever. So that's a great way to know like professionally what's going on.
Great. And I'll link to some of that stuff down in the comments or into the description of this podcast.
Nice.
So, cool.
Right.
Again, thank you so much.
Oh, yeah. Thank you.
It was great.
Well, there you go. Thanks again to Morgan and Jordan for taking the time to come and talk with me. Thank you to the Alberta Podcast Network, to ATB, to Shaw Business, and to Let's Do Coffee this week. If you have suggestions for people you'd like me to talk to, even if that's you, please send those to info@medialabyyc.com. And most importantly, thanks for listening. Let other people know if you enjoy it. We'll be back again next week. Have a great day. What did you have for breakfast? I'm going to just test your...
So I had... It's always really hard for me to remember what I've eaten at any given day, and then I end up eating nothing. Quiche. I had a quiche at Sidewalk.
Nice.
Yeah. It was really good.